Welcome back. Welcome back to Cut the Reveal. We're very happy to be back. This is season two, which is going to be a little bit different. So that's what we're going to talk about. But first, I just want to introduce my friend and my co-host, Ricky.
Hey, everybody. We're back. Back from the dead, some would say, but we're back. Yeah, this is going to be a little bit different than the episodes that you've heard before. We're kind of changing the format just to see how this goes. So it's going to be a little bit more stream of thought, a little bit more minutiae about what's going on in our lives. It's still going to be about editing and about filmmaking and, you know, the projects that we work on, but also the projects that our friends are working on and just stuff in general that excites us about, you know, the craft of editing and filmmaking.
Questions that we've seen out there, right?
Yeah.
And news maybe from the editing world, stuff like that.
Yeah. It's still going to be questions and we're still going to have, it's going to be a little bit more loosey-goosey than just like, okay, this is it. Here's the guest. These are the questions we're asking. So there'll still be kind of themes to it and whatever, but also it's going to be more off the cuff. So you might get episodes that are 10 minutes and you might get them that are 2 hours. So this is a warning, just so you know. But
Exactly. And the reason for that, you know, the thing is we're not just like, you know, we're not really podcasters or what's the name? I don't know.
professionals or not professional podcasters.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we kind of ask ourselves a question, like, do we do another season the way we did used to do it, which took quite some time because, you know, preparation for the interviews and editing, and we did have the episodes in the video form as well, and it all took time, and the reality is we wouldn't be able to do it regularly, you know, in that format, at least for now, when we are trying to focus on other things as well. So we thought, let's do something that is on a weekly basis. So that's our commitment, at least for now, that we do it weekly. Again, the length of the episodes might differ, but that's the commitment, right? We do it weekly. And yeah, there are some drawbacks because, drawbacks, maybe it's actually a feature, right? Where you get like a raw conversation. I think that might be a feature, at least for me.
I mean, this is all going to be raw. So we're, you know, you're going to hear all the ums and the likes and this awkward pauses in between us. So it's real. This is real.
Although, actually, this brings me to the first point. We are recording this episode for the first time ever. It's kind of like a trial for us, really, using Adobe Podcast, which we have like a beta access to. This is the tool that Adobe, I think, will be releasing soon. And to be honest, we see some things that could be different in it. And I think that maybe we'll even talk about this in future episodes. But for now, we're just testing it. And I think there will be like a one button feature there to remove all of the pauses and filler words. So if there is such a, if you can't hear any filler words or any long pauses, that's because there is this feature over there. And we
and we might edit out this explanation. So so you never know. So there might be stuff on the cutting room floor, but look for it on YouTube and the bloopers. I don't know. Anyway, yeah.
So what's new, Ricky? What's up with you? You've mentioned to me last week that you have a new gig this week.
Yeah. So currently I'm working on two projects, and then because I need money for another big kind of like life-changing thing that I haven't told you about, but my wife and I are buying a house.
Wow.
Yeah. So we are, for those who,
In Germany.
So for the listeners out there, my wife has a job here and that's how I'm able to be here. So we live in Germany. We're obviously from the States, but we love it here a lot. So we're, you know, her job is we're here indefinitely because she's not on a contract. So we are buying a home. And because of that, I need more money. And despite the amount of projects that I'm currently working on, I need more money. So as it goes, I'm lucky enough or blessed enough, maybe you should say, that when I ask the universe or I put it out there, then it provides. So I was like talking to a director, a friend of mine. I was like, I need to get some more work. 3 days later, an old client from out of the blue was like, hey, would you be interested in working on this project? And I was like, yes, your timing is impeccable. So it's nothing sexy, but the crew that I'm working with out of Denver is pretty amazing. So I really enjoy working them with them. And the project is just a simple awareness video, just like a 5-minute talking heads about new mm-hmm. things for whatever this corporate school or whatever it is. So, but as I've said before in the past, it's really the people that I get to work with more than the project that excites me about collaboration and whatnot. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it, but it is not without its stresses, having to juggle two other projects and then thinking about what we need to do for this house and also preparing to start editing for a new project. But as it goes, all the deadlines are at the end of this month, at the end of April. So I know that there is an end in sight, but it's still kind of like, why do I do this to myself?
Okay, so that's a wrap for today, guys. Ricky,
yeah.
Yeah.
But it's all I know. It's all I know. The stress, the ebb and the flow of being a freelance editor is, you know, you're like, at the bottom, you're like, I will never work again. And then at the top, you're like, I wish I never worked again. So.
How did you put it out to the universe? Because you mentioned that you've put it out to the universe and 3 days later. So just in your head?
I had the conversation. I'm working on my first narrative feature and it's micro budget. So, you know, it's not a lot of money, but, you know, I believe in the project. I really like the director and I are friends. So, you know, and that really helps and it makes it, and it's exciting. Something new that I've never worked on before. Compared to the documentaries and corporate commercial stuff I've done before. But I was like, I need to, you know, I'm committed to this, but I've got this house now. And so I need to get money. And he's like, I understand, you know? So yeah, basically that I had been thinking about it for a few days. And then I think I told my wife and she's like, oh, well, of course. And so, you know, it just kept on telling more people about it essentially. And then as it goes, you know, usually I hate to say this about myself, but it's something that I think all of us fall into is that we say that we're going to do something. And then just the act of saying something is enough to our mentally. They're like, okay, I've done something without really not doing the work. In the same way as like writing a list, like feels like an accomplishment, but it's just like writing something out. So I said that. And then at the same time, there was a lot of work that I was doing on this feature and then this other project. But yeah, then I got a text last Friday that, yeah, are you interested in editing some stuff for whatever? And I was like, I am, you know, and I jumped on it and made it happen. Well, I didn't make it happen. They asked me and then they sent me all the assets and the information about it. And I was like, all right, and that's how it usually goes for me. And then also as it goes, I think I've mentioned this before, is that even though this idiom has a bad connotation, but when it rains, it pours. And so whenever I get like a job, then I end up getting like a lot of jobs or a lot of offers all at once. And then it's like that feast or famine aspect of, oh my God, I need to take this. Cause if I don't, I'm never going to be able to work again. And then I'm just overwhelmed and it ends up working out. Like luckily this far, I haven't had, you know, a bad review in regards to like, I've dropped the ball on these projects or a project while I was working on multiple ones, and, you know, ruined any ties with the client, but it's still like, you know, hanging on by the skin of my teeth or, you know, my fingertips as I'm going through these projects, being like, okay, can I take enough time to survive as well as juggle these projects at once and be productive and efficient and succeed on them. So, but yeah,
I feel you. Yeah, it's been different on my end from where I've been for the past few years. I used to have like a regular client, basically on a retainer. And I took on other projects very occasionally because I didn't want to overload my working schedule, right? And, you know, I wanted to have time to work on YouTube stuff and stuff like that. So very often, if a smaller project would come out, I would just say no. Now, because of this returning client. But yeah, from time to time, I would take on other projects as well, but only the ones that were kind of like, you know, paying well, so to speak, right?
yeah, I get it.
Yeah, but for now I'm in a little bit different place. And it's kind of interesting to navigate this land where you do get this, you know, okay, if I say no to this, will I have something next? Mm-hmm. It's, yeah. And you know, as you said, like for actually, I have like two videos to edit next, two new clients,
Oh, great.
for next week. But both are small projects. But at this point, I'm kind of in a place where I need new clients regardless the size of the project, because I need to get myself to the place where I can say no to them again, you know. So that's also interesting, and you know, we all deal with it. We all deal with it. Some of us again have the periods of stability, which I had for like past 5 years, but you know, in this creative landscape, you always at some point you deal with this stuff of like, you know, fulfilling yourself and just trying to pay the bills and still like, you know, working on things that are your passion and passionate you a lot, right? Excite you a lot, you know, films, whatever. Yeah, stuff like that, and trying to get the dream job as well. So it's very interesting stuff to talk about. I'm sure we'll talk about this numerous times in the future episodes as well, as we navigate this how do you call it? The
New format or life?
no, the field with like bombs under the ground.
Oh,
What
the
do you call it?
minefield, the
Minefield,
minefield.
yeah.
Yeah, I think that especially from a freelance perspective, I feel like every time you end a project, you're kind of rebuilding yourself. Every project is the threat of like, I'll never work again. And then it's like, okay, I gotta get, you know, there's a hustle aspect of it to it that, you know, all of us are striving to not have to hustle all the time, you know, once we create a good enough network of people.
It's also important to diversify, you know, and I've been diversifying my income for a long time, and it's very helpful. You know, it's very helpful because during the times that you don't have like the inflow of new projects, those diversified income streams really help. And like kind of like save the butt, and you know, you don't have to stress out, basically. At least that's how it works for me. And one of the things that I've done many times throughout the years is to run like courses, and I used to run in-person courses in the city I live in. I haven't done it in a while, but this year I actually ran three workshops for Polish Society of Editors. And it was very interesting. It was like a software workshop, really. Not the I mean, the editors that are there are very experienced. At least most of them are very experienced. So I wouldn't, you know, even try teaching them how to edit per se, because like they've edited, most of them edited like 20 plus feature films, right? So I'm not in a place to teach them that. But I taught I was talking, the workshop was basically about transitioning from Avid to Premiere Pro, because many of those editors want to have Premiere Pro in their toolkit, right? Yeah, and actually something that I want to invite to any listeners that are interested in Premiere is that I'm doing like this diversify income kind of thing with Premiere Pro Workshop that I will be running live on April 20. So I think we'll put it somewhere in the description. It's a paid workshop, but it's dedicated to intermediate level editors. So someone who knows basically how to work in Premiere, but is not really familiar with new features, feels like is not using text-based editing in an efficient way, and basically wants to have, you know, some new features to in their toolkit again, right? Yeah, so that's what it's about. Premiere Pro workshop on April 20. If you're interested, check it out in the description. But just a very subtle,
It's very subtle
not very
hint. Hey
subtle.
guys, just so you know, it's
No, but
anything to
again,
up your game, that's professional development. And
yeah, exactly.
you can write off the
Exactly. And I
cost of it.
haven't done something like this in a while. You know, I've been, yeah, in a way, I've, you know, I've been going away from making videos about Premiere, but I feel like people want me to talk about Premiere more. At least that's what I, you know, get an impression from the comments on YouTube channel and stuff like that. So yeah, hence the workshop, the live workshop, 3 hours long, pretty much. We'll see how it goes. Okay. Yeah. Actually, Ricky, have you seen the new Frame.io?
I watched the part of the keynote video, but I had beyond that, like, I haven't dug into it. I mean, it's a beta version. So we're talking about the new Frame is Frame 4. And as they say in their keynote, they've taken all the feedback that they were getting from clients and users and kind of compiled it all into this new super deep, super dynamic frame that is almost like, I mean, you look at it and you think you're looking at it like a Premiere or, you know, or even DaVinci, like almost, it almost looks like an editing program, but it's purely just kind of, I don't know what the word would be, but you can do so much more with this version of Frame when it comes out.
Yeah, it's not just for reviews, basically, right? It's also, I think it's what they are trying to do with this version is they are trying to implement efficient media management software, media asset management software, right? I think MA, I think that's the abbreviation that is used for this kind of software. And you know, MAM? No, not. Maybe.
I don't know. Whatever.
Whatever, guys, whatever.
Media and management? Media management? It could be. I don't know. I haven't seen it, but... But anyway.
but yeah, I think, first of all, I haven't used it yet. They are the rollout, I think, is supposed to be gradual. At least that's what they said. Also, I kind of downgraded my Frame.io account a month ago. I was on like a pro version, but you know, since you can have a Frame.io 100 gigabytes of Frame.io in your Adobe license, kind of, right?
Oh, I
decided that I will downgrade to that Adobe license deal. So I have like 100 gigabytes of space at no extra cost, which is good for now, at least for me.
Yeah.
So and I know that they are releasing it first to the pro users. So again, I haven't used it yet. And once I will, I'm pretty sure we'll talk about this, Ricky. You know, you will probably use it as well. And we'll have a conversation of what it feels like and what could be different and what is great and stuff like that. But just my first impression of watching that keynote is one thing that I have to put out up there. I've been kind of promoting because I was really, really a huge believer in Kino. Kino was a software, if someone is not familiar with it, for media management, basically, but for videos. And you can do other things in it. You can transcode, and you can integrate it with Premiere. You can filter in a very, very efficient way. The rename, batch rename, stuff like that. A lot of things that you can do efficiently and specifically for videos. I loved Kino. I loved it. Unfortunately, the company was acquired by another, a bigger company, and they took probably, you know, the working force and the know-how and stuff like that, but basically they killed the project. They killed Kino, and I'm not very happy with it. Again, I was a huge believer and a huge fan of the software, one of my favorite pieces of software when it was still working well. Right now, I don't recommend you buy it because there is no updates, there is no support for it, nothing, right? I think they still sell it, but you shouldn't buy it anymore. But the thing is that when I was watching that keynote, one thought like struck my mind. They are doing a lot of things that Kino was doing, Frame.io. But the thing is that Frame.io will be subscription-based as it is right now.
Yeah,
and will be web-based as it is right now. And I don't think that it's in their best interest to make it standalone software that you could buy for one license, for one payment, basically. But for me, it would be best. It would be best if they would release Frame.io for what they just showed as a standalone software. With just, you know, a possibility of having that cloud storage that supports all of it as well. But my, what I would give to have this as a standalone software that runs just my PC without any, you know, web integration. Seriously, I think it would be really interesting to have all of that. All of that framework that they, you know, worked on as a standalone software. Yeah.
That's like when you were, I couldn't remember the name of the program and I was trying to look for, cause I had it, I had Kino for a bit. And then once basically it was killed, I was like, well, I'm not going to use this anymore. But yeah, I was thinking the same thing with all the collections and the metadata and the way that you can preview files and whatever. It looked at even the interface in a little way looked just like Kino. So yeah, I understand what you mean, but yeah, I frame is, you know, raking it in and with it being a cloud-based, web-based server and a program. So I doubt that they'll ever just be like a standalone because that would just take away.
Not possible. It would be bad for their business. So it would be good for users, but not good for their business. So, you know, especially since it's owned by Adobe, no way they're going to ever do it. But yeah, just, you know, the thought struck my mind when I saw that keynote and what they're doing and how they are like implementing a lot of stuff that I used to love in Kino. Yeah.
Yeah.
I still use Kino from time to time, by the way, but yeah, since it doesn't have any updates for codecs and stuff like that, it won't work with like the newest generation of Color Science for Blackmagic, I think, for Blackmagic Raw anymore, on Windows at least. I haven't checked on Mac, but probably the same. Yeah, anyway. Ricky, I also wanted to mention the two questions that I've seen recently in the GoTo Editor course community, because like I'm there kind of answering Premiere related questions.
Yeah, you're so the Premiere pro. You are the Premiere coach. So
yeah, kind of exactly. So there was one question that was like Premiere specific, which I thought is interesting. So I think it's worth mentioning here. And also another that I saw that is relevant to, I think, any editor that wants to work remotely is about accepting payments from a board. So let's start with that payment thing. So basically someone asked, what do you use to accept payments instead of PayPal? Because PayPal is charging like huge.
Yeah, it sucks. If I can help it, I never get paid by PayPal.
Yeah, PayPal is the worst. It is. It used to be good. It used to be good, like 10 years ago. I think that was actually the idea from the very beginning, was to get like a huge base of users. And once you have them, you can increase the fees so that it pays all of the investment that you've put into it, you know, in years go by. I think that was the idea from the very beginning. And, you know, when I switched from using PayPal for accepting board payments like 6 years ago, when I started working with Maths Pathway, which again was my stable client for the past five and a half years.
Yeah.
And I remember that when I was receiving the payment from them, I would be paying like $250 in fees.
Yeah.
Something like that. 250, I think. Basically, it was maybe even close to 300, I think, even, right? Because it was basically 5% for PayPal, for whatever reason, and then I would also have to pay for currency exchange.
Oh, yeah.
From Australian dollars to Polish zloty, right? So altogether, it was like 8%, I think.
That sucks.
Yeah. 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 Crazy, right?
Yeah.
And then I found Wise. And Wise is what I'm recommending to anyone these days. The fees has increased slightly as well from the time that I started using it, but are not even close to what you pay on PayPal, right?
Yeah.
So the fees are much low, like, I don't know, like one-fourth of the PayPal fee. And the exchange rate for currency is basically zero, right? I mean, the exchange rate is what it is, basically. Mm-hmm. You don't have to pay extra. You don't have this, like, you know, this broker approach where they're like, you know, giving you a higher exchange rate than it is on the market. They give you the real time market exchange value for any currency, which is a deal breaker. So I think when you summarize it, you know, we've exchanged currency, it will probably be around, depending on currency, but it will be probably around like 1.5% or something like that. So much, much lower, maybe even less for some currencies. So much, much less than PayPal. So I think it's great. So that's why I recommend it to someone in the GoTo Editor course.
And just to be clear, we are not sponsored by Wise. So this is just Peter saying it because it's a good recommendation for everybody. Yeah. Personally, I don't use Wise because most of my clients are in the States. So I don't have to. I mean, if nobody pays me by pay, I mean, only clients that are really independent. Like low paying clients are paying me.
You have PayPal. US account that you still use.
I have a US bank account. So I can get like direct deposit and whatever.
Yeah.
And I also have kind of a German, or European account. So if I do get paid, if I do get jobs here, I will have a bank account that they can also send to. So, but for everybody else, like if I get clients in, you know, outside in Asia or India or some other place else where that stuff was irrelevant, then I would definitely use Wise because you get screwed by the fees, transaction fees and whatnot for that. But
I mean, it's good to you mentioned that we're not sponsored by them. Yeah, we're not in any way. I just really enjoy what they're doing.
I don't think we're sponsored by anybody anymore.
We're not. We're just sponsored by this episode is sponsored by my Premiere Pro workshop, maybe, which was again not very subtle integration. But other than that, we're not sponsored, and we're gonna stay this way for a while. That's for sure. And when it changes, we'll let you know. Okay,
yeah,
we'll let you know if we're sponsored by anyone at any point.
What was the other question was about the low res. Sequence exporting from a low res sequence.
Exactly.
You had mentioned I didn't look to see where or who had asked it or whatever, so I didn't really do any information. I'm just kind of sitting here.
So the question was, can I export? Let's say I have a sequence in 1080p, right?
Mm-hmm.
With Ultra HD, so 2160p footage in it, right?
Yeah.
What happens when I export it to Ultra HD again? Will it upscale full HD footage basically, or will it use that information for Ultra HD right away and the sequence size doesn't matter? That was basically the question, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is that the sequence size does matter because of the order of operation that any NLE is going through.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, if you're doing this, if you have Ultra HD footage, you put it in full HD, so basically 1/4 of the resolution timeline, and then you export it to Ultra HD again, you're basically scaling up full HD footage. So you're scaling up four times as many pixels as they are in the source sequence, basically. So you're not using that information that potentially it has from the source footage, because it has to scale it down first for the sequence and then scale it up again during the export. And you know, you can say, how can you be sure? So I wasn't sure, actually, because I was like, maybe there is a workaround. Maybe it's smart enough to know that if you're using Ultra HD as a source, it will just use it instead, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, I don't know. So I made a test. I ran a test, okay? Mm-hmm. So I created a sequence that was like 540p high in resolution, and I exported it to 4K, right? And the quality was disastrous. Like, you know, you could see clearly. Like, you know, the thing is that you can't really see that the drop in quality, at least not as easily when you upscale it from full HD to Ultra HD.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do it from smaller resolution, it's obvious that it's not using the source footage, all of the pixels from the source footage, basically, in an efficient way. And again, it's because of the order of the operation that has to be done in Premiere Pro, right? In any NLE, really, because it's not just for Premiere. I've checked, it works the same for Resolve. I bet it works the same for Avid. I mean, you don't even have to check it there because that's, the whole Avid workflow is about like deciding first on, on your things, on the codec, on the resolution, stuff like that, right? So yeah, so that's how it is. If you want to have a good quality final export in Ultra HD, you should edit the timeline, the sequence in HD as well. There it is. There it is.
You heard it here, folks. Now you know. See, we're still teaching you stuff. There's still questions being answered. So we haven't lost our way completely. But I mean, I feel like that even despite the order of operations, like unless video becomes vector-based, like it's always whatever you do on the timeline, it's gonna adjust it. And then when you're exporting it, it's basically redoing it all. So it may take the information, but these are like, for lack of a better term, like JPEGs. So you might have the quality, but every time you make it, it's going to lose the quality until you're basically just looking at like a watercolor mess. So, but it is what it
Exactly.
is. But
It
I
is what it
think
is.
it is what it
Okay.
is.
I think we are kind of in a deep end. Do you know the term deep end?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're in the deep end. How's that? In regards to what?
I mean, we finished the topics for today because yeah, while it's not really edited, we do have like a list of topics that we want to mention in the episode.
So now we're
That's
just
how it's
gonna
gonna work.
freestyle. We're just gonna
Yeah.
freestyle.
Yeah, but I do have one last thing that actually maybe two even that I want to talk to you about.
If it's not on the list, we can't talk about it.
Is that the rule?
No, we're breaking it right now. Not on this
It was a
podcast.
rule. Yeah, until now it was a rule.
We just made it up to break it, just to break it.
Exactly. It feels good, right? To break a rule.
Yeah.
Once you know it, you can break it.
That's
Once you
right.
understand it, you can break it,
That's
like in
right.
editing.
We're free. We're free on this podcast. So
So
anyway.
Letterboxd. I wanted to talk about Letterboxd because I've mentioned to you Letterboxd, again, not sponsored. I don't know, like a year ago, maybe even 2 years ago, and you haven't really used it, but
Oh,
you
a long time
started
ago,
using
longer
it.
than,
You
yeah.
started using it, like, I don't know, a month, 2 months ago, which I was excited about. I was excited to see that you're using it finally.
Yeah,
How
so for
does it feel?
those
And the question is, do you look every film you watch in there, or do you forget?
I so for those who don't know, Letterboxd is like a movie Facebook or LinkedIn or Goodreads. So it's like a social site with reviews, and you can follow your friends and see what everybody's watching and whatever. So a long time ago, when Peter and I first became friends, he sent me an invite or something, and so I got onto it, and then kind of was like, I don't have time for this. Until this year, just recently. So at the turn of the year, Erwan Kurek, he's a friend of ours, great editor. He's been on the podcast before.
Yo, everyone.
It was we,
If you're
I was
not
talking.
listening to it, you're
Yeah.
screwed.
Yeah. Shout out, shout out. Anyway, he had mentioned to me, I forgot how it came up. There was a go-to editor or another Discord group. We were talking about movies, and he had said his resolution was to watch a movie every day for the year. So, and then if
I
he
wonder
didn't
how he's
watch the
doing.
movie, if he wa he forgot if he didn't watch a movie today, then he would have to watch two the next day, and so on and so forth. And I was like, ooh, I like that challenge. And so I was this he had already watched like 32 movies by the time I had talked to him about this or heard about it. And so I kind of picked up the challenge. And so that's why I started to become active on it. Usually watch a movie every week because my wife and I have pizza and film night on Saturdays. And we are usually watching new movies. And that was kind of part of what Erwan was talking about. He watches a new movie from different countries every day. So that's what I've been trying to do. And if at the very least, at least a new movie. So I have been logging the new movies that I've watched. My wife and I really like the Lord of the Rings movies, including the Hobbits and the Harry Potter movies. So we tend to watch those a lot. We'll get in and like, oh, I want to watch this. And then we watch all of them in a, but I don't usually log those. But any new movies I have been. But as it goes, like, I like to see what people are watching, but I don't care about writing reviews unless it's like a really bad movie or really reading reviews. So, but that's about the limitation of my user, okay. How I use that.
So first of all, you should upload the thumbnail because you look like unnamed user.
Oh,
so that's my petition to you. That's my petition to you, number one.
Oh, I thought I did.
You don't. Okay.
Sorry.
And secondly, by the way, you can log rewatched movies in Letterboxd as well. There is an option to hit basically rewatched.
Oh, there. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I do it, but you don't have to, obviously. And how are you doing with that one film a day? Are you
not
are
good?
You, are you on that?
I am not. I was doing really good at the beginning, but then I got busier and then I just couldn't because my wife and I don't like the same movies. So I have to wait.
I have to wait
until late at night to start watching a movie. And I kind of wasn't trying to watch a full movie every day or every night, just like, okay, I'll start a movie and then I'll finish it tomorrow. But then I just got too busy.
Oh no.
So yeah.
No, I admit to doing it sometimes as well. I don't like doing it when I can. I'd rather watch in one go, in one sit, but yeah, I admit I do it sometimes as well.
Yeah.
I said it. Damn it.
Your secret has been unveiled. But yeah, I mean, other than that, yeah. I feel like it's strange to say, but I've been an editor for over 20 years, but I didn't go to film school. I like taught myself and I, you know, not until kind of later in, I don't even know if that's right. Like I started making movies when I was younger.
Oh,
like
come on, Ricky.
What?
You should at least pretend. People know I haven't been to film school either.
Well, yeah, I know, but they
don't have reason to listen to us anymore, man.
No, well, even so.
Two guys that haven't even finished a film school and they're editors, filmmakers. Right, yeah,
that even said, but we have made films. So if anyway, our street cred is enough with that. Like I have a couple of feature documentaries under my belt. You have a couple of narrative features or not features but shorts under your belt, so we are legit in that sense. You are on this journey with us, but my point was like the intelligence, like film intelligence, like I think that you watch movies and you've seen it and you inspect things and you really learn from it. Same with Erwan, like he's really, you know, knows that type of stuff, like film knowledge and film intelligence. And despite, you know, loving movies and having made movies in the past as I was younger and editing for so long, like I feel like not until I started working on narratives stuff was I like, okay, this is something that I really need to, you know, inspect, like educate myself on in regards to you're watching an edit, you know why it works and why it doesn't work, but then also like feeling a little bit more about that type of stuff and like being able to like articulate why something works and doesn't work, which is, you know, something that everybody should be able to critique something and take criticism. And I'm reminded of when we talked with Eddie Hamilton, where he was like, he said the same thing. He's like, I don't know, he didn't really go to film school, but he's like, my film intelligence didn't come from watching movies. It came from editing movies. And I feel like that's kind of what I'm doing. And with Letterboxd, that's a part of it too, is, okay, I'm watching this movie and I'm really, you know, paying attention more to like why things work and why they don't work compared to like, okay, I'm sucked into the story. And so that's kind of why I was, because of Erwan kind of spurned me into that. And because of the new projects that I'm working on, it's really made me focus on that stuff to like take a new perspective on film and editing.
Yeah. Well said. And I agree with all of that. That you know, I've had a time in my life where despite loving movies, I wouldn't really watch them that much. You know, I would watch like one film a month, really, or something like that, which was crazy. I watched some series, so it's not like I haven't watched anything, but I was more into TV shows for a while and having watched feature films that much, only occasionally. But it changed a few years ago and I started watching more, and Letterboxd is very, I don't know, I like that it gives you this organized approach and you can always go back, see what you've seen, you know, check what you've seen, check what you liked, stuff like that. So I enjoy it. And for me, this year, I watched 40 feature films already, which is not even close to one a day. I think it's closer to one every 3 days. but it doesn't include short films. It doesn't include documentaries as well, and any TV shows. It doesn't include them, either. So it's not that bad either. I logged this stuff, and I think that's what's interesting to me about Letterboxd is that you can log things, and I log things outside of Letterboxd as well, because Letterboxd will not allow you to log TV shows.
Oh yeah, so, that's kind of weird. I guess it's because,
That's because of their ongoing nature, right? So you can log miniseries there. Miniseries will have a home on Letterboxd, but series, ongoing series, will not. Multi-season series will not. But yeah, I log audiobooks I listen to, I log books I read, I log screenplays I read, and stuff like that. So anything goes, basically, in my spreadsheet. So 40 feature films so far, a few series, two miniseries, two documentaries, only two documentaries. I should watch more documentaries. Yeah.
I got 38. I have 38 films so far, and that doesn't include the rewatching of
The Race is On. We'll see.
The Race is On. Wins.
The Race is On, guys. We'll go back to it. The Race is On.
Oh, I should probably add this other stuff, because limited series. I just watched that limited series about Nickelodeon. You know Nickelodeon? It's the channel in the States. They had what's it called? Quiet on the Set.
They made Avatar: The Last Airbender, so I know it.
Yeah. Yes, but so the documentary is, it's Quiet on the Set. I forgot the name of it now. But yeah, it's basically about bad stuff that happens to kid actors on shows. It was pretty dark. Okay. It was really, it was
Sounds
well
dark.
Done, but it was also like, ugh. I mean, it doesn't.
So watch it yourself.
I watched it with my wife. No, yeah, I watched it with Danielle. We were both watching it, but it was like, you know, there was a lot of, what the fuck? This is so fucked up. Like, how could people allow this? And, you know, it's not really unveiling anything that anybody doesn't know, that, you know, it's really hard for to protect kid actors and, you know, just kind of the trials and tribulations that they go through and whatever, or the unsavory characters that hang around movie sets or that have worked in the field for a very long time. So it kind of just sheds more light on that. There's some stuff that I was kind of like, ugh. I mean, it's terrible. It's kind of set up in a way that's more like newsy than it is like a straight documentary in a way, because you've got people that weren't really a part of it that are just writing about it and then like commenting on it, which some of it was kind of annoying in my opinion, but regardless, I would check it out if you are into that. But anyway, that's a long-winded explanation of saying, oh, I need to add that because it was a limited series.
Good. The one that I can recommend. The one that I can recommend. I mean, good, not good. That I've seen like 3 days ago, 4 days ago, is The Worst Person in the World.
Oh, yeah.
It's a film from Norway. Have you seen it?
I did not. I know that it was up for an Oscar a couple years ago in the international category, and I wanted to. It's been on my list in my head. I haven't put it down anywhere, but yeah.
Yeah.
How was it?
Strongly recommend it. Strongly recommend it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Not sure if you're going to love it, but even if you're not, then it's still worth a watch. That's one of the films, you know, that even if you don't love them, you still take something from them, I think. Not from the metaphysic point of view or whatever or anything, but just from the filmmaking point of view. The filmmaking in it is very interesting. The story is interesting as well. The story structure is interesting. But the filmmaking, the shots, I don't know. All of it is very interesting. Seriously, so I strongly, strongly recommend it. The Worst Person in the World.
I have my letterbox open right now, so I will enter it.
Speaking of, not sponsored.
Again, not sponsored.
We sound like we're sponsored by somebody.
Yeah, but okay. It's not. But we're not. But you
repeat it one more time, and I will not believe you.
So I was gonna say, okay, I'm adding it right now. Speaking of something similar in regards to like very interesting and very cool is the Zone of Interest. Have you seen that or watched that yet or heard of it?
No, don't spoil it for me.
It's really good.
Yeah, right. 3 stars on Letterboxd.
Yeah, I mean, it's really good. It's not something I would like watch.
I hate it. Say, it's really good. I hate it.
Well, 3 stars is, it's kind of middle of the road.
No, I joke.
If it was bad, it would be a 2 or a 1. So let's say if you ever find meat, which I doubt you will on Letterboxd, there's a lot of like middle of the road stuff where I was like, this is good. And I said that I liked it though. So it's a 3 star and I liked it compared to just like 3 stars, like it's fine. It's good.
It's not
a movie that you're like, oh, I want to watch this over and over again. I say that, but I think that I would watch it again because of how interesting it is. And it's just very, because I don't know how much information you know about the film or whatever. And I don't want to give it away and ruin it for you, Peter.
Very basic. Very basic. I know only where it happens basically and in what time area.
Yeah. So there is like a story in it, but it's not like anything that you've ever seen, at least that I know of, that I've ever seen that I was like, okay, this is similar
in this type of movie. Yeah.
So, and it's pretty and it, but it's like, as I'm learning with narrative and as you can attest to, like sound is really what makes films.
Yes. And especially this one. So I heard, I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard that sound editing in the zone of interest is the most important factor when it comes to viewing experience.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. And so that's what really makes this film. If you were to see this film without the sound on, it would be nothing. It'd be like, okay, this is a movie, but the sound is what makes it, what takes it from essentially normal to extraordinary, but also like extremely disturbing. So keep that in mind.
Lovely. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. It's on my watch list for a while now. I had a chance to see it in the cinema during Camera Image Film Festival. But yeah, I chose something else because I didn't know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Better. Okay, man. Is it a wrap for today?
I think that's it. I think the timer went off. I don't know how long that was because I've never had a timer.
I would love to know if anyone is still here. So if you're still listening to it, let us know in any way. Could be IG message, could be Facebook message, could be email to cut to the point, sorry, to contact to podcast@cuttothepoint.com. Could be anything. Let us know.
Yeah. If there are questions that you have, if you are listening to this and you have questions or stuff that you want to hear us talk about in a more nonchalant way than we have in the past, or just to ruminate on it, let us know. Movies too, or books and whatnot.
Yeah, we there will be a SpeakPipe. Will we put a SpeakPipe link in the description?
I mean, we can, right? If anybody uses it. Yeah. If nobody uses it, then we'll put it up for That's this episode. And if no one uses it, then you've lost your privileges, guys. but anyway, so yeah. All right. Well,
thank you for listening to this episode. And till the next week. That's a thing, right? You'll hear from us next week again. Which is exciting. Exciting to have this consistency that hopefully we're not going to break.
Yeah. We'll have something of interest will have happened. Oh, you know what? I'm going to be out of town next week, so I won't be able to be here.
It's okay, Ricky. We'll record earlier. We'll do it. Come on. We said every week.
That's right. So this is a Friday. It'll be a Thursday maybe. Anyway. Okay. So sorry, good. I'm rambling, but... Cut to Reveal.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Cut to Reveal. We love you guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.